welcome to Radio Rumble. My name is Solomon.
And my name is Taylor. First, we have Jacob and Xander with Team News.
In fourth place, we have Blue with 97.16%.
In third place, we have Green with 97.44%.
In second place, we have Yellow with 98.56%.
Finally, in first place, we have Red with an astonishing 99.71%, just off 100%.
Thank you for that. Next, we've got Logan and Chloe with school news.
Here's your school news.
This week, a lot of exciting things have been happening around school.
Last Thursday, it was World Book Day.
Many children dressed up in costumes. Some popular ones were Harry Potter and Minions.
On Wednesday, children from Key Stage 2 went to see Sister Act at the Academy. It was a thrilling experience.
On Thursday, children from Class 11 invited their parents in for a workshop on making a shadoof.
And finally, last Thursday, children from Classes 8 and 9 went on an educational visit to Beamish Museum to support their history unit on coal mining in the local area.
That's all from us. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Now we have Fern and Chloe with some sporty news.
On the 13th of March, a Year 6 basketball tournament at East Durham College.
On the 20th of March, an exciting basketball event at East Durham College.
Now we have a special guest with James and Monroe.
Interview the guitarist Mike Ray. Mike has been part of some different bands and we are looking forward to finding more about him. Hi Mike, thank you for letting us speak to you today. Our first questions are going to be about your school days.
Which school did you go to?
I went to two schools. I went to Peterborough School and I went to St. Mark's School. I would like to say that they were really happy days, but they weren't, because I knew really early on what I wanted to do with my life, probably at the age of 11. And once I discovered music, I didn't actually see any point in learning anything else, which obviously I look back on now as being not a particularly smart thing to do, because your education on many subjects is really, really important. But for me, music just completely dominated everything from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to bed. All I could think about was playing guitar, writing songs, how I was going to form my band. So I was a little bit odd. And so every moment I was in school, I was just kind of like, this is stopping me from doing what I want to do. So as a result of it, when I got to 13, I started to be homeschooled so that I could play guitar all the time. So my school days were a little bit different from most people's school days.
Well, question two will be pointless, because did you like school? Obviously, no.
Well, I mean, it wasn't that I didn't like school so much. It was just kind of, I knew what I wanted to do. And for better or worse, I've always been a very focused human being. And kind of like, once I set my sight on something, anything that kind of gets in the way of that, I saw as being like a hindrance. And so it was more like a mental thing in my head to try and, you know, just get through the day so I could get home to back to my guitar as quickly as possible. So that, you know, it wasn't kind of like that I hated school, but it's just kind of like I knew how I wanted to be spending my time.
Who was your favorite teacher?
Oh, my Lord. If I'm absolutely honest with you, and I think honesty has to be important, none of them. I had my music teacher, who I should be able to remember his name, but I can't. I remember in a music class, and I knew that I wanted to be a musician, but I didn't know anything about music. And I remember one of the questions in the class was, how many notes does it take to make a chord? And me being enthusiastic, I just shot my hand up quickly, and he said, how many? And I went 10, which was completely the wrong answer. But the teacher then, in front of the whole class, put me down and basically said, and that's why you'll never be a musician. And so from that moment on, I had deep resentment towards anyone that could tell me what I could and what I couldn't do. So 1 year later, I played a concert in front of 800 people, and I took great pride in going back into that same classroom and saying to the teacher, I just played in front of more people than you ever have in your life, and you told me that I would never be able to be a musician. And that kind of feeling towards people telling me I couldn't do something was very much initiated by a teacher whose job is to encourage you, to help you achieve your goals, putting you down in front of other children. And so from that point on, I just thought the only way I'm going to get to where I want to be is by my own determination. So I didn't really have any favorite teacher, and my real teachers came much later on in life. My real teachers came into my life probably in my 30s. That's where I really started to learn from successful people and the characteristics of what it took to be successful. So you have to be very careful who you decide is a teacher or who's a good teacher. So you have to make your own decision. It's kind of like, just because someone is called a teacher, they may not necessarily be the best teacher for you. So you have to make these decisions yourself, and that's part of the learning process of life. That's quite a deep question, but I'm quite a deep guy.
Was music your favorite subject because you are a musician?
It wasn't really a subject. It literally dominated everything that I did. It was, first of all, it was football. Actually, that's not true. The very first thing that dominated my life was chess. I was like, I don't like to use the word, but I was like a chess prodigy. And at the age of 6 and 7, I used to represent, my school and schools and counties and things like that. So chess was like the first thing that I was fanatical about. And it's all about strategy. And then I discovered football, and I became obsessive about football. But then I discovered an album by a band called Van Halen. And once I heard this, then I literally, it wasn't a subject. It was like every single moment of my day was spent, how can I get better at this? How can I write songs? How can I become how can I become a successful guitar player? How can I become a successful musician? So it wasn't really a subject. It just literally dominated everything, literally everything. I used to eat food, but with my other hand, I was practicing as I was eating. That's how fanatical I was, and still am.
When did you start to like music, and who inspired you?
Well, I always kind of liked music, like when I was like 6, 7, and apparently I used to mime with tennis rackets and things like that. But the first time that something just changed my life was when I heard a band called the Sex Pistols, and they were a punk rock band. And I think it was in 1978. And it was the first time that I heard an electric guitar played in a way that was aggressive. And it was kind of like, it wasn't just music. There was something coming out of this guitar, which was, it went beyond music. It was kind of like a lifestyle. It was like, this was like, almost like a religion. You know, it's kind of like, this is what's true. This is like something that's honest, something that speaks to me, and didn't speak to my parents. It was kind of like, it meant something to me. And And so the first sort of bands I got into were punk rock bands, which now they seem kind of light. But at the time, you know, back in 1978, they were, you know, very anarchic, and they were life changing, and governments, you know, thought they were threatening to society. This is how important they were. But it was bands like the Sex Pistols, bands like the Clash, Generation X. And so punk rock got me into music. But then it was when I heard bands like Van Halen and Led Zeppelin and Deep Purple that it was kind of like more refined. It was kind of like, this is what really speaks to me. But punk rock brought me in, but hard rock made me what I am.
I'm 9 and I'm learning how to play the guitar. So when did you learn how to play the guitar?
Well, you're actually starting younger than me. So I think I started playing at about 10, 11, when I just started learning the chords, and my fingers bled because it was really hard, and it took me a long time to play a bar chord. But it's a lifetime vocation. It's like, I'm 56 now, and like I still feel like a beginner. Even though I've been playing for like 44 years, it's kind of like I hear music now and think, oh man, I can't play that. You know, I want to learn, I'm going to study until I can play this, you know. And so it never ends, you know, it never ends. You know, it's just kind of like it's a destination that you never get to. So that's why you really have to enjoy the journey, you know, because like this, even the best guitar players in the world, they're still learning. And then the other thing is maintaining it. You know, I used to play when it was like at my most fanatical, probably like 10 hours a day. I was playing every single day, 10 hours, doing all the scales, learning everything. And then songwriting, that's a different thing again. You know, just because you're a great musician or good musician doesn't mean that you can write songs. This is a completely different mindset. So, and I started writing songs straight away, you know, very, very soon into learning the chords. For some reason, little words and melodies and things started to come together. So you'll find that there's two disciplines. There's the world of a musician, you know, where it's about technical ability and feel and interpretation of someone else's music, like in an orchestra and things like that. But then there's the world of a writer, and writers think very, very differently. And if you think about it, the whole music industry is based upon writers. You know, it's the people that create music that feeds everything else. It's the life source of it all. And so at the beginning, I spent a lot of time learning the technical stuff, learning the theory, learning the chords, the scales, how they all came together. But then when I started writing, I gradually, you know, more of my time was spent writing than practicing. And then as I, you know, as I got into bands, then you had to learn how to split your time, you know, because you had to spend a lot of time writing and then you had to spend a lot of time practicing. So that's where the real discipline comes in.
What's your favorite guitar to play? Because mine is a Yamaha.
That's another tough question, you know. It's like over the years, it's changed for me. So when I started, I was very attracted to Flying V's because like two of my three favorite guitar players played Flying V's. My three favorite guitarists are Michael Schenker, Edward Van Halen and Randy Rhoads. And Michael Schenker and Randy Rhoads both played Flying V's. So I was kind of attracted to them. And they, you know, you have to be kind of brave to play a Flying V because it has a shape to it that, which basically says, you know, you better be good, you know, because if you're going to play a Flying V, you have to be good because it's kind of like it's a bold statement. But as the years went on, then I started to favor guitar shapes a little bit more like the Fender Strat shape, which is what Edward Van Halen played. So it sort of changed over the years. And I have a lot of guitars, so, and different guitars sound differently and they make you play differently. But for me, the most important kind of guitar is one that inspires me to write. So if I go into a music shop and I start picking guitars out, most of them is, have you seen Harry Potter?
Yeah.
You know, like when they pick the wands and they say mm-hmm. that the wands pick the wizard, the guitars are very much the same. Just because it's like a great guitar for one person, to someone else, it can be a piece of trash, you know? So for me, it's literally, does it make me want to write? And it doesn't even have to be expensive. Sometimes it can be like a mid-range guitar, and it's just all of a sudden, as soon as I start playing it, all of this music comes out. And then, and recently I went around to somebody's house and they said to me, oh, try this. What do you think of this? And they gave me this guitar and I started playing it, and it went out of tune straight away. And I just went, it's rubbish. And he goes, that's a £50,000 guitar. And I went, it's a £50,000 piece of rubbish. You know, there's no, what's the point of having a guitar if it doesn't stay in tune? So it's literally down to your connection with the guitar.
You know, you have been part of Skin, Jagged Edge, and Red, White, and Blues. Which band was your favourite to be a member of?
Oh, that's another tough question, Monroe. So I formed all of those bands. So each one of them was my band, because I put it together and I wrote all of the music for it. So and a band is a very tricky thing, because you have to get a group of individuals, all of whom think the same way, and all of have got the same goal. It's a little bit like a football team. Do you play sport?
But yeah.
Yeah. So well, like when you're on a team, you know, it's not so much about individual ability, which is important, don't get me wrong, because your ability will determine who you get to play with. Because the thing about musicians, you always have to find musicians that are kind of equal to you or inspire you, you know? So you have to make sure that you're not letting them down. They have to make sure that they're not letting you down. So there's a lot of trust that goes in with a band, the same as a sports team. So the hard thing about bands is keeping it all together, you know, making sure that everyone goes at the same rate, keeps the same goals. And that, you know, so the one that kind of meant the most to me was Skin, because it was the band Jagged Edge, if you're interested, was kind of like, there was a lot of conflict within that band right from the beginning. So it wasn't a particularly nice experience, because everything was a battle. Writing songs was a battle, recording, everywhere you went, it was just like, it was hard work. So when that band fell apart and I formed Skin, the experiences of Jagged Edge made me a lot clearer on how I wanted the band to be run and the decisions that would be made and the path that it would take to get there. And because it was quite a successful band, and we had like a top 10 album and top 20 singles, and we toured all over the world, at the time it felt like my decision making was justified. And so for that reason, I'm proud of what that band achieved. But don't get me wrong, every band has conflict, and every band is hard work to keep it together, you know? And there's lots of very successful bands where the band members don't get on with each other particularly well, but because they know that the sum is greater than the parts, they do the best they can to keep it together. But it's not easy.
Did you always get along with your other band members?
I very seldom get along with any of my band members. And there's lots of reasons for that. One is when you're the songwriter, it's your project. When you write the songs, same way as the writer of a movie, it's kind of like you're bringing in your creation, you know, and so you have a very clear vision of how you want it to go. And so the hard part is the conflict that goes along with that, you know, because everyone has their own vision of where they want to be, what they want to be doing. So you have to, you know, you have to be aware that when you're forming a band, it's highly unlikely that there isn't going to be some form of conflict along the way. So that's the hard part. I mean, there are a few people within bands that I've been in that I'm still friends with, but they tend to be the drummers. I tend to get on best with the drummers, and I get on least well with the singers.
Which is your favourite song to perform?
Oh God, Monroe, you get the really hard questions. You'd be like, that's really, really tough. The things that bring you the most joy is when people sing the songs back. You know, that's kind of like the ultimate thing for a writer is when you're on stage and you're playing a song and then the audience all sing the song back to you. There's very few feelings in life that are as good as that, you know, and that's one of the things that kind of drives musicians on, because that feeling is so euphoric. It gives you so much happiness that everything in life second to that, you know, it's not as good. You know, and that's the thing that keeps people going back on stage when they're 60 and when they're 70, is because they're going to get that level of love and adoration in a way from thousands of people that no one person can ever give that to you. You know, I think the only thing that you could compare it to is like if you have children of your own and you see them doing well, you know, and you have a feeling of pride. That's the only thing that I could think as being like comparable, or scoring the goal in an FA Cup final, or, you know, it's kind of like, that's what being on stage is like when you're connecting with an audience. And so there's a couple of songs that I've written, one called Tower of Strength, and another song called Look But Don't Touch. And these songs generally get the best reaction. So when you're playing them, you kind of feel the happiest. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is your favorite album you've recorded?
Oh, once again, that's another tough one. Albums are, you know, they're very challenging things to make. Because you have to put a lot of love into them, a lot of time. The first Skin album, because we recorded it in Los Angeles and we worked with one of the most famous producers in the world, a guy called Keith Olsen. And that was a real learning experience. He was definitely one of the best teachers I ever had, because he taught me things within those 2 to 3 months that I still do 30 years later. That's when you know you've got a good teacher, is because they teach you something that goes with you for the rest of your life. You know, that's when you know that you've met someone who's had a really big impact on you. So the first Skin album was probably like the one that was the most significant, most successful. And I worked with the best people on that record, whether it be the producer, whether it be the engineer, the musicians, the singer of Skin, one of the greatest singers in the world, unquestionable, could hold his own against anyone. you know. So it was, you know, it was a little bit like a team that wins the premiership. You know, everything comes together at the right time. And on that particular record, everything came together at the right time with the right people.
Where is your favorite place to perform?
Well, probably Stone Dead Festival. You know, it's kind of, I've played a lot of places in my life. I've played at, you know, all over the world, played at some of the biggest festivals in the world. But the thing with Stone Dead Festival is there's a feeling of love through the whole event. You know, a lot of places, you know, there can be like 100 bands playing, so you're just another band, you know, and it's like a conveyor belt in and out. But the thing about Stone Dead Festival is that from the second you arrive, you're made to feel welcome, you're made to feel special, you feel loved, you feel looked after, and it's kind of like a privilege to play at this festival. And from the moment you arrive to the moment you leave, you feel that life couldn't get better than this. The audience are amazing, the stage is amazing. It's just kind of like a perfect experience. So I would have to put Stone Dead at the top, but I would have to put it equal to with playing on the main stage at Download, which is like 100,000 people. And it's like the premier rock event probably in the world. So I'm very lucky that I've done both, and I would have to say that those two would be like the best. But you always got to hope that the best is yet to come, right?
Thank you for letting us speak to you today. We really enjoyed it, and we really appreciate you taking time from your day.
As you're more than welcome, James, and both James and you, Monroe, you've been absolutely delightful. And ask questions as good as any journalist I've ever met. So congratulations to you as well, because at the age of 9, you're as good as most journalists in the world. My absolute pleasure. Do you want me to play? So keep practicing, James. It's relentless.
Bye.
All right, you take care.
Now, we have a poem with Layla and Olivia.
Today, Olivia from Class 10 will be reading a poem called Hideous Homer.
I hate homework. I could be as happy and calm as a white fluffy cloud watching TV. But no, I'm stuck here like a potato with no brain. Outside, the wind is whining like a cat in the rain. My mouth is as dry as the sand in the desert. Homework is bad news. A hamster is spinning in a ball inside my stomach. My brain is swimming in a world of nothing. My face is as red as a chili pepper. A steam train comes in and out of my ears. Sumo wrestlers get ready for battle inside of me. A suspicious sly spy is slithering around my sludgy brain. People say magnificent maths or religious RE or delightful drama. But I would say mad maths, raging RE and difficult drama. Wait, a known answer. 4 times 4 is crash, bang, boom, clang. No, my baby sister Lily just made me forget my answer. I want to poof her into thin air, but homework is zapping my brain. Homework is hideous.
Now we have Ruby and Lola with a funny joke.
Why did the chicken cross the playground?
I don't know. Why did the chicken cross the playground?
To get to the other slide.
Now, we have back to school.
What was your favourite class and why?
My favourite class was either music, because I love singing and I love performing, or English, because I really enjoy a debate and I like arguing about what I think the most strongest.
What school did you go to?
Primary school, I went to Yorden Primary in Horden, and secondary school, I went to Easington Community School, and that is now, I think, an academy, so it's Easington Academy.
What, did you have a favourite teacher, and what subject?
Absolutely. I had a year six teacher in Yorden called Mr. Langan, and he was a musician, and he played the piano, and he was just the most fabulous performing artist, and he really inspired me just to have a go. We also did a World War II concert. So when I was in primary school, the anniversary of World War II was when I was in year six, and we did a concert and that, and just remember him playing the piano and singing along and being fantastic.
Did you like school?
Loved school. I think I really enjoyed primary school, and then I enjoyed secondary school for different reasons. I think they both have their challenges, but I think if you try hard and do your best and have a go, you're always going to enjoy it, aren't you?
What was the discipline like at your school?
I'm not old enough to have had the cane, but it was a lot of detention. So especially in secondary school, we had after school detention. So if you didn't do your homework, a slip of paper would be going home with you at the end of the day. So your parents didn't know you were in detention until you ended up turning home at home late, because we didn't have things like Dojo and things like that to get in touch with your parents.
What did you do for fun at school?
I had lots of friends, so I played out a lot. Music, absolutely. I did GCSE music, so I played an instrument. I was part of the school choir. Just pretty much what I do in primary school, to be honest. Part of the school choir, loved performing, so if we ever had a concert on, it would be me. Helping out in the classrooms. I wasn't necessarily the biggest fan of sport, but I really liked sports like rounders that we could play on the field with our friends, because I'm really competitive. So that was right up my street.
Was it a strict school?
In different ways to what school is like now. I think at the time I can remember seeing children being made to stand in the corner with their face in the corner if they'd done something wrong. Very different. I think it was school then was very shouty. If you got wrong, the teacher would shout at you rather than try and talk to you about what you were doing. Whereas I think our discipline is very fair. We talk to the children, we try to find out why it's happened rather than getting wrong for why it happened.
Was most of your teachers male or female?
I think in secondary school it was a fair mix, because it depends on what lesson you were studying. I think most of the English teachers were female at the time. A lot of the PE and maths teachers were male. Primary school, my favourite teacher was a male, but I think all the other teachers in primary were female. And at the time we didn't really have teaching assistants either. But I can remember a lot of the people that helped out and the volunteers were all female as well.
Did you take water bottles to your school?
No, we never had water bottles, and I can't ever remember having a water machine either. So I don't really know what we did if we were thirsty. And I can't remember what we used to do. I can remember being on school dinners and being given milk for our school dinner if we wanted to have it. But I can't remember. We must have had something. You've all got the water bottles and water machines to fill it up, and I can't remember ever having that.
Did you take stationery?
Yes, we used to have, especially not in primary school because it was all provided, but in secondary we used to have a pencil case with everything in, to make sure we had pencils, pens, rubbers, rulers, everything we needed in school. And we also in secondary needed to buy a mathematic calculator for our GCSE.
Thank you for letting us interview you.
Now we have Charlotte and Gracie with some music.
This week the violins were doing White Stripes by the Seven Nation Army.
Back and forth through my mind, behind a single ring. In the midst of Seven Nation Army was recorded 2003, the 17th of February.
That wraps things up. Thank you. Goodbye.